Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, July 9th. I'm Ray Graff. My God, it's hot. Oh, it's so ridiculously hot right now. You know, that's the thing about human nature. Yeah, we're going to complain if it's too hot. We're going to complain if it's too cold, if it's raining out, or if it's dry, or the... Listen, you can blame Jason Goff, and we have him here with us today. Meteorologist Jason Goff will be on the line to answer your questions about weather. You can ask a question about weather if you want at 800-348-2551, but I'd rather you just complain about the weather because it is his fault. 800-348-2551, meteorologist Jason Goff, your weather calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the line, we are joined by our buddy, meteorologist Jason Goff. He's here to answer your weather questions. You know, he's got a great website, jasonsweather.com. He is also doing stuff with the Times Union. And, of course, you saw him on TV for years around here. Always great to have Jason Goff here. And I have many things to complain about with the weather. And I hope you do, too. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you hear any batting sounds, it's because there's a bug in the studio. I'm trying to kill it while I'm doing the show in a relaxed way. And, you know, I will try to kill it in a humane way. So if you're going to complain about that, forget it. 800-348-2551. Jason Goff, welcome back, sir.
Thanks, man. I was just thinking, you know, when are we going to be able to get into the same room again? I can help you with your bug hunting duties, you know?
You know, it could be a hallucination. It's been a bad day. It's a very small bug. I don't see it at the moment, so it might not be anything. Hey, speaking of strange things, man. Rich Guthrie was on a couple of days ago for the Bird Show, and he says, oh, yeah, I'm doing a little project with Jason Goff in which we stand out in the weeds and look at birds. What gives, man?
I'll tell you what, I'm so excited about this. I'll tell you the real quick how this all came about. So I have a good friend, actually the fellow that shot my Wine About the Weather show.
Yeah.
He called me back in May and said, hey, do you have any connections to local birders up there? And I said, well, you know, I gave a talk to the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club last fall. Let me call the president and see. They were looking specifically for somebody that was obviously very knowledgeable about birds, but not necessarily an ornithologist. We wanted somebody that, you know, scientists sometimes can really get into their own space, which is great. That's what we want. But they don't necessarily make for good entertainment.
Yeah.
So to speak. So we needed somebody with a good personality, but also that had the knowledge and, you know, kind of along the same lines as why a lot of meteorologists wouldn't necessarily be good on the air. You just have to know how to communicate. Well, certainly Rich checks all of those boxes. He's great.
Yeah,
so
man.
I got that all connected out. And then he called me back and he said, hey, would you want to host this show? And I said, man, I don't really know anything about. I have a couple of bird feeders in my backyard, but I don't really know anything about birds other than I think they're really cool and all that. And he said, that's perfect. We don't want somebody that is knowledgeable. We have Rich. So he and I drive the show. My goal, obviously, he's the expert. I just learned how to tie my own shoes 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of steering the show along and hopefully asking the questions that a lot of our viewers will have or have in the moment. So I just kind of throw those out there, and Rich doesn't miss a beat. He answers them, and we just kind of move on from there. And, you know, we just have a great time with it. We shot our second episode last Thursday up in Washington County at the Grasslands there.
Yeah.
So that should be coming out soon. And, you know, we'll continue to promote it as such, but you can check it out. You can check out our first episode on our three social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It's all at BirdcastCC. So nice and easy. Birdcast Coast to Coast is the name of the show.
Oh, my gosh.
And we do a lot of cool things in there. We check out pictures of wayward birds, if you will, birds that are somewhat out of place and birdscapes of folks' backyards. And anyway, it's a really cool thing. The production company behind it is first class, first rate. They know what they're doing. So we really think we're onto something here, and About one in three Americans are interested in birds. It's a $38 billion a year industry, so I think we're on to something, man. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I hope that now that he's so big for his britches, he'll come back on the show and do the bird show here once in a while. You know,
I'm sure he will. Well, he's involved with a lot of other stuff. You know, he does work with Cornell, and you know world renowned for their what they do in the world of ornithology and all of that. So. I'm sure that Rich's head won't get too big.
All right, fair enough. All right, well, that's not the show today. Today's show is weather. Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest, 800-348-2551. I am sick and tired of the heat advisories and the heat waves, Jason Goff. Your fault.
Whoa. Hey, let's time out here. What do you mean you're sick? This is the first one we've had, brother.
That's enough.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding.
All right.
I'm kidding.
I'm just checking.
I do like to blame you about generally other weather. We did have a heat wave, though, right? We had three days in a row of 90 degrees plus not too long ago.
It was in late June. It was actually four.
Yeah.
And so that's classified in this part of the world as a major heat wave. 3 days is a heat wave. 4 days is a major heat wave. So that's just the definition put forth by the National Weather Service.
And we have about three or four emails here. Let's blast through those, and then we will hit the phones at 800-348-2551. All right, Jason, this one came in quite a while ago from Ann. And Ann says, Siberia had an epic heat wave this year. I hope it means we don't have winter this year. I love the Berkshires, but hate winter, and I'm too poor to get out. Will there be winter in the Berkshires?
That is a certainty.
All right.
Yes. I'm sorry to say for that. I mean, certainly the skiers that are running over the mountains there, they'll be happy about that. But, yeah, that was really something in Siberia. And I'm glad that she asked it in that way because weather really, when you expand it out, it is a global thing. What goes up must come down.
Right.
And that part of the world, they experience huge temperature swings, the biggest on the planet. So they can go from whatever the temperature was that day, good grief, it was like 110 or something like that. But then they can be as cold as 68 below.
Yeah.
See, so you want to talk about some weather to complain about, brother. You've got quite a spectrum there.
Either way, it's not a vacation spot, right? We can agree on that.
No, sir.
This is from
Rob. We can definitely agree on that.
This is from Rob in Voorheesville. Weather balloons, subject heading. I sometimes see weather balloons launched from over by SUNY Albany. Couple questions. What role do they play in gathering weather data? What happens to them when they come down? And that's from our buddy Rob in Voorheesville.
Oh, that's a great question. First of all, they are absolutely crucial in terms of weather forecasting.
Even to this day with satellites and everything else?
Absolutely. Satellites can estimate, they can measure. The men and women that develop those things are absolutely brilliant, but nothing compares to actual readings that you get from instruments.
Yeah.
And so you have every Weather Service office in under the United States Department of Commerce. So you have, of course, all 50 states, and then you have U.S. territories, Guam, Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands. They all have weather National Weather Service offices, and they all launch balloons twice a day at the same time. And all of those data are fed into the supercomputers, and they go into all those equations, and you have all the things, and then effectively you get a weather forecast gets spit out of that. That's obviously a simplification of it. So what happens is they measure all of that. There's a little thing that's attached to the balloon. It's called a drop sonde. It kind of looks like a small shoebox. And so it floats up into the air, and then it takes off. And sometimes I'll see the Weather Service will put out on Twitter, you know, hey, if there are particularly strong westerly winds aloft, for example, our radio sonde landed in, all the way over in central Massachusetts sometimes.
Right.
I mean, it can go way out. So if it does happen to fall in your backyard, though, it has a little return address on it. You just drop it in your nearest mailbox, and then it gets back to the Weather Service. I mean, they don't get them all back, but the more that they get back just means that they don't have to buy extra ones, so it does save the taxpayers some money.
Right, you are. This one's from David. This is my question. Why is it that during summer storms, the raindrops seem to be larger than a rainstorm in the colder months? Is that my imagination, or is there something to it? That's from David.
No. Very good question. No, it is not your imagination. It is just a function of the humidity. I mean, if we were There's one, I'm looking at the radar right now, there is one lone shower just to the south of Hoosick Falls, right along the Vermont-New York border there, and over in the northeastern Rensselaer County. So I would imagine there are some pretty big drops coming out of that puppy as well. It's just a function of the humidity. The dew point temperatures as they are right now around 70 degrees, and you can get, not always, but certainly you can get some really big raindrops that will fall, and it's just, as I said before, what goes up must come down.
Okay, this is the last email, and then we'll take a quick break and then hit the phones. 800-348-2551. Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest. This one's from Kieran. I wanted to ask about the direction of thunderstorms in our area. We live in Rosendale, New York. Most years, thunderstorms seem to come directly from the west, southwest. Last week, they seemed to come from directly north. Is this a rarity, and what causes this? That's from Kieran.
No, I got a couple of questions about that. That's a good question as well. Yes, generally our prevailing direction is west to east, and you know it can be more specifically northwest to southeast. That's how fronts typically come through. And what happened last week, we actually had two different scenarios that just coincidentally happened to happen in that same week. The first was we had an upper-level storm that sat pretty much over the New Hampshire coast, like right over Portsmouth.
Yeah.
For about 2 days, and that just sat and spun. We had plenty of moisture available, so you get these little, just think about like a pinwheel or little spokes on a bicycle, you know, and in this part of the world, the northern half of it, you have pieces of energy and they rotate counterclockwise around this low. So because of where that storm was and where we are, the storms were coming north to south because we were on the western edge of that upper level low. So that was the first.
Yeah.
The second was we had, as I said before, our fronts typically come from west to east, but we had a front that came in from the east. Those we get a few times a year. It's certainly not a huge rarity, but and those they're actually called backdoor fronts because they kind of come in from the wrong direction, if you will.
Yeah.
And so with that served as the focal point for showers and a few storms to pop up, and those two kind of rotated and went down from north to south. So it was two different things. Yes, it's certainly not a common thing, but it's also not unheard of by any stretch.
Jason Goff is our guest. We are overdue for a break. We'll take that break, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Back with your calls coming up. Thank you, Count Basie and the orchestra. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, about 2:23 on a Thursday afternoon, joined today by meteorologist Jason Goff. And let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Eve, it's all about you. You're in Rexford. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have never noticed a weather pattern more bizarre than the one that preceded this recent heat wave. My mother-in-law had her 90th birthday. We had a pool party. It was 60 degrees out that day. During most of this period, which ended when this heat wave started, it seemed to me that it was always about 70, 75 degrees. It was raining every other hour, every third hour. It might rain a tenth of an inch. It might rain an inch and a half. You never knew. And there was thunder a lot, but I never saw any lightning. It just was so strange.
Hmm.
Is there a general explanation for what happened there?
Jason.
So you're talking about the last heat wave. So you met back in June or?
No. The heat wave that we're in right now, this heat that's coming up right now.
Uh-huh.
So ending about 4 days ago, there were about 10 straight days of sprinkles and showers and sudden cloud bursts and thunder, but no lightning. And it wasn't hot and it wasn't cold. It was just weird.
Right. No, we were again kind of in the throes of that upper level storm that we were just talking about, and why things were coming from north to south We had a little bit more of an in, because that storm, where it sat basically over the New England coast, it didn't have us into what you might expect in the summertime, where it's a day like this, where you're going to get these big storms popping up and firing up and big heavy rain and all of that. So there was just, it was, I mean, it, you know, I never say weather is weird. It just is weather, but so it's a little unusual just to have that thing sit there and spin in that sense. And it was able to tap into that. And we did have enough instability to get some storms going, you know, just isolated as they may be. Now, I will tell you that you may not have seen lightning, but it was there. Thunder and lightning are like peanut butter and jelly. You can't have one without the other. So you're always going to have lightning and thunder to follow. So, yeah, it was just, you know, it was just one of those things, weather just doing its thing.
All right, Eve, thanks a lot for the call. Jason Goff is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Hey, by the way, just as an aside, if I wanted to move to a place that was 60 degrees all the time, what is the most moderate location in the United States where I could go?
I would say Southern California, specifically like south of L.A., like down San Diego way.
Yeah.
I mean, it can get hot there. But generally speaking, it is probably the most consistent and the most temperate of climates around. I mean, anywhere else you're going to run the risk of, you know, getting colder or wetter or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, if finances were not an issue, because, you know, real estate ain't cheap down there, but, that's the place to be if you can do it. The weather,
okay,
just doesn't really change a whole heck of a lot. It's beautiful, but right. It's to me, the weather there is just boring. I couldn't deal with it.
I mean, the drawback is it'll eventually drop in the ocean. That's really the drawback for me, right? Let's go to Jesse.
You sound like Lex Luthor, yeah.
Okay. Jesse in New York, you're on with Jason Goff.
Hi there. I had a question about the similar question as the one before about the weather and the rain that's been happening. I remember last summer, we had this bone dry spell almost the entire beginning of summer. What's the difference between this year and last year?
Well, I mean, synoptically, not much. It just, you know, sometimes, well, a lot of times in the summer, you can get into these patterns where you can have stretches where we'll have, you know, 8, 9, 10 days of no rain. And it just depends on where we are in what we call the long wave pattern, which is where the jet stream is. So, you know, we'll have a big ridge of high pressure that'll sit over the east, and that'll basically just sit and keep us dry and keep us hot. We potentially may get into that about this time next week, actually, maybe Wednesday. We'll see how that shakes out. But it's just a matter of how things sort of move along. I mean, some summers here are better than others. And that's just kind of the way that it rolls, really. There's not really any rhyme or reason to it other than it's just the way that the pattern's set up. And, you know, weather is so dependent on other things, if you will. As I said, it's a global thing. So what's happening in one place will affect what is going to be happening in another.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call.
All right. You're welcome.
Now we go to Dawson in New Jersey. Where are you calling from in New Jersey, Dawson?
Right at the top of New Jersey, Montague.
All right. Well, welcome to the program. You're on with Jason Goff.
All right. Thanks for taking my call. I called last year from I was up by the Canadian border in Swanton, about 2 miles away from the border.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it was a trend over the past, you know, like 3 years. It was last year, it seemed like. And I called you like I think it was towards the end of the summer. And it was like real hot and dry up there. And like the weatherman was always threatening rain, and it never really materialized, and when it did, it was real heavy, and it would just soak up. All the puddles would be gone within like a couple hours, and everything is really, this year it's like even more intense. All the fruit is wilting on the berry bushes and the pears and everything. The fruit trees are all wilting. And you know, right in that area you have a bunch of apple growers, like large scale. And they don't have, as far as I know, they don't have any kind of irrigation. I was just wondering if you had any comment on like a trend in the area, real, real dry, hot. And this year it came early on, it seems.
All right, Jason, it's tough to extrapolate based on only a couple of years, but go ahead, sir.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I'm just now looking at the map that was released by the drought monitor, and it's actually a little drier as you head over toward the St. Lawrence Valley there up in the St. Lawrence County. And, you know, again, and we are in most of eastern New York and western New England is in what is classified as a moderate drought, believe it or not. So it has been dry. It's been warm. The Weather Service put out a thing yesterday that said that we have set a record for the most days at or above 85 degrees this century, that is. So not a record. I take that back. Since 2000, we have the most days since June 1st of 85 degrees or higher. And so it's just, you know, it's been warm and it's been dry. But there's not, as I said before to the previous caller, there's not really any, you know, rhyme or reason in that sense. It just, we kind of go from one thing to the next. And Ray, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, 3 years does not make a trend. So, you know, next summer it might rain up there every other day. And that is, I mean, this part of the country, I will say, is about as drought proof as you can get. So that is a good thing. I mean, overall, the Northeast has pretty good weather. We don't generally have to deal with a lot of nastiness, and the specter of a drought is rarely even relevant around here.
All right, Dawson, thanks a lot for the call. Well, I can tell you that my front lawn was brown a couple of weeks ago.
I mean, it was dry as can be. You know, man, that grass gets crunchy like that.
Yep.
And, you know, the soil moisture drops and all of that sort of thing. And, you know, that's what happens. We end up in these little stretches where we have no rain and warm temperatures. And, you know, that's just that's the basic water cycle. You get lots of evaporation. And if you don't have anything to trigger that condensation or precipitation, then you stay dry.
And, you know, it's much better now. But why is it the weeds always come back first? This is my question, Jason Goff.
Well, they are resilient, right? They're like cockroaches. They just figure it out and they get it going on. But that is very true. Those things, they tend to grow more efficiently than anything else, unfortunately.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest. You know, I get the Empire Report feed in my email here, and this breaking news out of NBC New York. Tri-State could see first tropical storm landfall since 2011 on Friday after blazing heat. Tropical storm's coming. No?
It is and it isn't. I just checked the Hurricane Center site before we went on to see. As I put, anybody that gets my email in the morning that I send out, I've already tried to preempt this, that it sounds sexy, if you will, for a news outlet to say, hey, there's a tropical storm coming. Now, that's not to say that a tropical storm coming most of the time is not a huge deal. And certainly Irene and Lee and, you know, those things are huge deals. But in this particular case, it doesn't matter if this thing gets a name or not. I'm just more concerned, not even concerned, but just trying to keep an eye on the track of it. All of the convection, it's not a very well organized storm. A lot of the convection is east of the center. So, you know, we're going to get some rain out of it, maybe a little bit of wind, but it's not going to be any different from any other, you know, kind of rainstorm that we get. You know, I mean, it's a little unusual to have a storm like that coming up the coast. It's something that we would typically see more of in the wintertime in the terms of a nor'easter.
Right.
Different mechanism for how it gets going. But so it may become a tropical storm or a subtropical storm, yes, by definition. But as far as the real effects, we won't know, and it won't make any difference one way or another whether or not this thing is given a name.
Okie doke. Let's go back to the phones. Jason Goff is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich in Wilton. Hello, Rich.
Yeah, hi. Afternoon. Hi, Jason. So I've got a question,
Rich.
On how you doing?
Hey, can you turn that radio down easily, Rich? He sounds annoyed.
Okay, it's on doing damage assessments. I know that the vast number of storms in our area are straight-line winds due to downbursts and microbursts. The question I have is, how do you do the damage assessments as accurately as you can with tornadoes? I know you do with the size of the trees and damage to property and houses and so forth, but what I'm getting at, an example, is let's say you have a tornado that has 100-mile-an-hour rotating winds. If the tornado is traveling at 50 miles an hour with the storm, then that means on the right-hand side of the storm, the winds can actually be 150 miles an hour, where on the exact opposite of the tornado, the winds would be 50 miles an hour, the so-called retreating side. So that's kind of tricky, I would think, to do an estimate. How would you go about doing that?
It is, and you know, and to be honest, it's not a linear thing like that, because you know, you certainly it will enhance the winds, but it's not like you can say, oh well, we're going to add it this way. In one example that comes to mind is the Long Island Express, the hurricane that came barreling up and ran into southern New England in 1938. It was moving at 70 miles an hour, but that didn't add 70 miles an hour to the sustained wind that the storm was throwing out. So that's that kind of one little piece there. So basically what the Weather Service is, what they do is, to clarify your point, most of the wind damage that we get here is straight line wind straight up, straight line wind, as opposed to from a downburst. Downbursts also are straight line winds, but they're a lot more rare in terms of the damage overall that this area will get. A lot of times it's just winds that are coming out of that storm and they're blowing, you know, in a straight line. So what the Weather Service will do to determine that is they will go out and check out all kinds of things, as you mentioned, property damage. They'll look at the way the trees are damaged. Are they snapped off halfway up the tree? Are they flattened out in a radial position, for example? That is a telltale sign that it was a microburst or a macroburst, which are both forms of downbursts that come out of there. Or if it's just a straight line wind where you tend to get gusts that come out of the storm and they might blow into, you know, whatever the side of a house or whatever the case may be, and take off some shingles or whatever. So that's in essence what they do. The Weather Service actually calls it a survey. They go out and they survey the land, they survey the structural damage, and also the damage to trees, and then they can determine, almost like a detective really, where the tornado touched down and then where it lifted back up into the clouds, how wide the path was and how long the path was, and then based on all of the damage within that those parameters, then they assign it a number on the EF scale.
Rich, thank you very much for the call. Jason Goff is our guest, and Mark is in Salem. Mark.
Hello. I'm reading a book called The Brothers Vonnegut, Kurt Vonnegut and Bernie Vonnegut.
Right.
I'm sure Jason knows who I'm talking about. I took a course from him years ago. Vincent Schaefer invented cloud seeding with dry ice. And then Bernie made a silver iodide thing that he burned and was more effective and actually filled the reservoirs in New York back in the early 50s. I'm wondering, like, with all the forest fires we have on the West Coast and lack of rain in certain places, whatever happened to cloud seeding? I mean, I don't hear about anything about that.
Yeah. You know, it would be nice to be able to do that, obviously, because you could you know, head off wildfire season out west. When Vincent Schaefer did that over Mount Greylock, they are reasonably sure that he actually did incite the flurries to come out of that cloud, but they weren't exactly sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe somebody at UAlbany would dispute that. I don't know a whole ton about it. But I do know that at least initially they weren't quite sure if, you know, but not for him going through that cloud, would flurries still not have fallen? Because as you know, you can walk around and some flurries will just pop up and then they'll go away. So, you know, the whole concept of controlling the weather, you know, yeah, you can do it in a lab, but the scope of it and the scale of it is just
it's too big. Excuse me, but Bernie Vonnegut did it hundreds of times and had results. I mean, there's a whole chart.
All right.
And so it's not like it was just a one-time thing. The military took over and they seeded hurricanes. They seeded clouds all over the country.
Yeah.
And then it's just then they were getting results. And then it stopped, and I just wondered, is it something that people were afraid of the liability from changing a storm, or was it?
I don't know a ton about all of that stuff. The military did do a thing called Project Storm Fury, and again, what I'm guessing is that it just, they realized, I mean, certainly with Project Storm Fury they realized that it was just too big of a, you know, it was too hard to control. I mean, weather has so many variables. we can't sometimes predict what the weather is going to do in 6 hours. So how are we going to make clouds rain over a certain area? There are just way too many variables there.
All right, Mark, we have to take a break. Jason Goff is our guest. It's Vox Pop. It's weather today, and no one's really complained about any weather conditions yet, and it's irritating me. Let's get some complaints in here. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. The number is 800-348-2551. Meteorologist Jason Goff joins us today. Any big thunderstorms in our region coming up this afternoon, Jason?
No, I was just checking the radar again. Now, a couple of little, and actually they're not even throwing any lightning out of them, right around Petersburg, heading into southern Vermont, up there along 7 south of Bennington, and that is it. So we're going to get some rain out of this entity, whatever it may be. However it may be designated as we get late tomorrow night into Saturday, and there may be some storms around with that, but no big banner severe weather days. I mean, we've had some stormy days here and there, but nothing extraordinary as yet.
All right, let's go back to our phones on the home stretch here, and Margaret in Chesterfield. Margaret, you're on.
Hi, thank you. Jason, could you discuss the connection between weather and air quality?
Yes. A lot of it has to do with, well, it could be a couple of different things. Air quality with respect to pollen, you know, we get those days in the spring, and then as we get deeper into the spring, you go from tree pollen to grass pollen. And when we have some dry stretches, such as we did in June, the air quality can be poor as far as the pollen goes. That's when people are, you know, taking Claritin like Skittles, right? Because you're trying to
nice.
to get rid of all that stuff. But rain will actually scrub the air out, and rain will scrub air out of any particles, you know, smoke or anything else that is in there. So weather can certainly help that. And then, of course, wind, you know, depending on where you are in the world or where you are in the country, wind can help to either clean the air out or make the air dirtier, depending on the direction from which it's coming. So you can get dust, you can get, in some cases, you can get acid rain like we had in the 80s coming from the plants in Ohio there. So, you know, it just really depends on a prevailing wind direction or any wind direction, and then also how much rain. But generally speaking, the air quality tends to go down the drier it gets, because rain is a good scrubber of the air.
And just a note from our legal department, we do not recommend that you take Claritin like Skittles. Use only as directed.
No.
That's
yes, only as directed. One per day will do, but I couldn't eat just one Skittle if somebody, you know, threatened me. So.
Right. And by the way, don't take Skittles like Claritin either. I mean, I think it goes both ways. Drea in Troy, you're on with our friend Jason Goff.
Hi, I have a complaint. You were looking for a complaint. I have a complaint.
Splendid.
At this time of year, my radio gets absolutely horrible reception.
Yeah.
Specifically with WAMC.
Ah, splendid.
And I was wondering, does it have to do with, like, more moisture in the air between here and Mount Greylock, or is it the angle of the sun, or what is it that would affect radio reception so badly?
Well, I can't really give you the exact answer, but I would blame Alan. I mean, I think that's the reason I think is part of it is just the leaves are on the trees, and with the frequency that you're at for 90.3, there is some absorption there, and you know, things like that, right?
Hey, that makes
sense.
Okay,
so it doesn't have anything.
Sound like an engineer.
What did you say, Drea?
So it doesn't have anything to do with the angle of the sun or the amount of moisture in the air or anything, because it's fine in the winter.
Moisture could, in fact, be an issue there for sure, especially at higher wavelengths or shorter wavelengths. You know, like if you get into the gigahertz, moisture can really be a problem. But, Yeah, moisture can do it. There could be a thing called tropospheric ducting. And, you know, when storms are coming and you might pick up a station really far away, just out of nowhere. But in a lot of times with FM like this, if you have an antenna inside and not on the roof, it's there. There's a lot of foliage out there, you know.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, thanks for the information.
And we appreciate the complaint. Thank you very much. Jason Goff is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. Joan Marie in Smallwood, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
It's a great show.
Thanks.
I like birds, but my concern is fish and the water. Recently, there was an article I read in the newspaper that a lot of fish were dying because they weren't getting enough oxygen because the waters were so hot. Has that been a trend? Is that happening? And in particular, I mean, I'm concerned about all water, but the Delaware and the Hudson, I mean, has there been a heating trend? And does that affect our water in the earth, in the wells, in our wells?
No, I don't know if Jason can answer this one, but go ahead there, sir.
Well, I'm going to, again, I would certainly defer to somebody in DEC about this, or, you know, an ichthyologist or a wildlife biologist about this. But I will tell you that certainly as the water warms up and we don't get rain to help to cool it off, and not only to cool it off, but also to keep the water circulating. So you get stagnant water. What happens is you can get these algal blooms. And the algae, like any other plant, you know, they're going to need oxygen and things to continue to grow. And so they'll deplete some of that from the water. But again, that's a little out of my jurisdiction as far as science goes. But, you know, you can see fish kills that do happen, you know, more in the summertime that are not a function of some kind of contamination other than we'll call it natural contamination, which is just, right, again, the heating and the stagnant of the water, and it takes away what the fish need and gives it to other things. So it's not a very, what's the biological term? Symbiotic.
Very nice.
I think maybe, I don't know. Right. I was not a huge into biology. So sorry, I can't be of more help, but certainly, yeah, I mean, that's an issue especially when you get drier patterns. It tends to be warmer, which is going to warm the water up. No rain will not keep that water sort of recycled or replenished, if you will, and then things tend to get stagnant, and then the fish have issues.
Joan Marie, thank you very much for the call. Jason Goff joins us today at 800-348-2551. Mimi in Saugerties. Hiya, Mimi.
Hi, how are you? It's Mimi, rhymes with Jimmy. And,
oh, Mimi, you're on. Go.
Yes, hi, thank you. I have two questions. One question is, I spend time in both New York City and the Hudson Valley, and for years I've been checking and comparing temperatures, and it, you know, this is very unscientific, but it seems to me that in the last several years, I often will see temperatures hotter in the Hudson Valley where I am than in New York City, whereas in the past I could always rely on it being hotter in New York City than up here in Saugerties. And my other question is, when did we go from a heat wave being 3 days 80 degrees or above to being 3 days 90 degrees or above?
Jason.
Well, to answer your first question, a heat wave is 90 degrees or higher. I don't know when it was or if it was ever 80 degrees, because 80 degrees is just not that hot.
No.
Certainly different parts of the country have different criteria for all kinds of weather. Like a winter storm warning here means a lot is issued under a lot different criteria than one in Atlanta, for example. The same goes with heat, right? Like when I lived in South Texas, it was like this every day, literally for 5 months, unless we had a ton of rain coming up from the Sierra Madre in Mexico.
Yeah.
So, you know, they don't bother to call it a heat wave because you literally have 100 and some odd days in a row like this. So that's that first piece. The second piece is with respect to the differences in temperatures. A lot of what happens in New York, certainly cities are warmer overall than more rural areas. So not that Saugerties is rural, but certainly it's not as big a city as New York. So you get what's called the heat island effect. And that is just a function of all of the surfaces that are absorbing heat. You have a lot of blacktop, obviously, in New York City, and that's not going to reflect heat. It's going to absorb it. Now, there are two little pieces to that. The first is that in New York City, if you have a south wind or a southeast wind, even in the summertime, the Sound and the Atlantic Ocean are cooler than generally the air around it. So that's going to have an effect. Water has a tremendous effect on what temperatures are along those coastlines, which is why Miami, there are things about this, but some will say that Miami has never actually hit 100 degrees, but some people will say that it did hit it a few times on the nose. But again, you wouldn't think that, like Miami, it's a hot place, but it's right on the water. So water has a huge influence on moderating temperatures. Same in the wintertime, New York City generally is not going to get as cold as it could because of its proximity to water. The other piece is that depending on your wind direction, where Saugerty sits, which is not way up into the Catskills, it's a little bit farther down in the valley. If you get the right wind direction, you can get what's called compressional heating. And it's the same idea, concept, if you will, of when you put air into a tire, it's going to heat up. When you compress air, it heats. So as air comes down a mountainside, it is going to compress, which means it's going to heat up. So it is possible that certainly, you know, Saugerties could be warmer than New York City. So a lot of it has to do in both locations, what your wind direction is.
All right, Mimi, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Weather Today with meteorologist Jason Goff. Mike is in Glens Falls. Mike, you're up.
Hi, thank you very much. I have lived in this area long enough to remember Lake George not being as warm as it is now. Growing up here, I can remember if the Lake George water temperature hit 70 degrees, we were amazed. But I've noticed in the last several years, it is not unusual for the Lake George water temperature to hit in the low to mid-70s. And I believe that may be a side effect of global warming.
Jason.
Yes. Yeah, that's a fact. I mean, our what really matters when you're trying to warm up a body of water, even one like Lake George, and I'm with you, man, I wouldn't be in that lake until July 1st because I hate cold water. But what you really want to do, if you want to heat up a body of water like Lake George, you want warm nights, and especially warm nights with clouds. Because that really just tends to keep the heat in the lake that it gained throughout the day, and then you just sort of build one day to the next.
Yeah.
And our nights in this area since 1970, and even before that, but since they've really been kind of keeping track of it, our nights have been getting warmer overall. And so that is going to have a direct effect, again, in an overall way, on lakes being warmer. Now, I don't know. I mean, you're not talking about a 10-degree difference, but certainly the lake – you know, overall, it may be a couple of degrees warmer, you know, here in July 2020 than it was in July of 1980, certainly in 1970. So, you know, it's not a huge thing. And again, people tend to remember things a little differently when it comes to real and perception. But the lake is, you know, it's nice when that lake is nice and warm.
Have you been in yet this season?
I have not been in there yet this season, and I am overdue, man. Lake George is truly, I've lived in a lot of different places. This is one of my favorite places on the planet. I love it up there, so I'm looking forward to it. And I will jump in. It's been nice and warm, and it's going to be nice and warm through next week.
I don't think I've had a swim there since 1981, and it was pretty cold.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Let's go to Debbie.
You got
to
go.
Debbie, you're on with Jason Goff.
Hi, thanks. Great show.
Thanks.
My question has to do with, could you explain relative humidity in relationship to dew point? But I'm intrigued with the last call, what Jason said, our nights are remaining warmer, and I'm curious why.
All right. Two questions there.
I'm going to, yeah.
Go ahead, Debbie. Which one would you like first?
Either one, whatever Jason's up for.
All right, Jason, what do you think?
Okay. Well, it's one of my favorite topics. You want to talk about complaining. I do like to jump up and down about the difference between relative humidity and dew point.
Right.
To me, relative humidity is worthless. I hate it. I hate it when it's used in forecast because it tells you nothing. People say, oh, well, and I'll give you a perfect example, right? I'm going to look at our current observations here, and let's take a look at this. So in Albany right now, 255, It is, and this is actually still the 2 o'clock observation. Now, anybody that's going to step outside right now, they are going to tell you, man, it is surely is humid out there, but the relative humidity is 53%.
Okay. Yeah.
So what is that? Now, if you think, well, shoot, that's not bad, right? 53%.
Right.
Well, the dew point is 70. So that's what makes the difference, is that when you warm up a parcel of air, it increases its ability to hold moisture. So yeah, the water, the air is only holding half of what it could. Now, can the air get to 100% humidity at this temperature? No, it cannot. But a dew point of 70 degrees, I mean, you know, you have another, you add another 4 or 5 degrees to that dew point temperature, and it is going to be like, you know, an equatorial jungle out there, and the relative humidity will be at about 60%.
Right, okay.
So people are going to be like, you know, it doesn't sound that bad. So that's the difference. So dew point is a much better measure of what your of what the actual moisture and for people and pets and everything else, what their comfort level is going to be as related to the moisture in the air. As far as the nights warming up, that's just, you know, that's just a function of our temperatures. The Weather Service every 10 years establishes 30-year averages, so they're updated every 10 years. So, and in each of those, after every decade that's done, the temperatures have come up. The temperatures are higher, and, you know, that's just, it is what it is. That's what the thermometers have said, and you do the average, you do the math, and that's what you get.
All right, Debbie, thanks a lot. Now, we only have 30 seconds here, Jason Goff, but Blaze in Ballston Spa, if you can go very quickly with a question, we'll try to get an answer. Well, that was very quick. He's gone. Are you there?
No.
All right, hurry up.
No, right. I have a quick question. Yeah. Indian summer is the term I've grown up with. I grew up in this area, and normally that means a heat wave in September.
Okay.
That's what I thought.
So the question is, what is Indian summer? Is that the question?
In Indian summer is loosely defined as a stretch of warm weather that happens after the first freeze.
After the first freeze.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, so you typically will get it. Around here, we'll get an Indian summer generally in October.
All right. Well, that's a perfect way to end the program. Jason Goff, once again, you're on the Times Union website too, right?
Yes. I send them an email forecast every morning, and they put it on their app. They put it on their social media. And then, of course, you can catch my forecast on jasonsweather.com. And if you go on there, you can subscribe to my email. As Bluto said in Animal House, don't cost nothing.
Yeah,
so you'll sign up, and I'll send your you'll get an email out every morning. They're usually sent out by about 6:15, 6:20 every day.
And that's jasonsweather.com. It's a great place to send your weather complaints. Jason loves that. In fact, do you have them set up now as a separate thing? Uncle Ray's complaint corner?
No, but now after this show, I probably will have to do that, Ray, and I'll have you to thank for.
Well, it's my pleasure. Support comes from Whitney's Farm Market at Country Gardens, Cheshire, Massachusetts, offering bulk landscape products for landscapers and do-it-yourselfers, topsoil compost, bark mulch, pavestone pavers, decorative stone, and more. Whitney'sFarmMarket.com. At Curtis Lumber, providing materials from start to finish for any size building or home improvement project. Daily delivery service, CurtisLumber.com for store locations. Thanks again to Jason Goff for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Charlene Knight took the calls. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we talk Greek Fest on a Food Friday. That's at 2 o'clock. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.